Welcome into the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with Charlie Goldsmith, and we are back from the Bengals bye week with a fresh episode to get you guys set for the upcoming matchup between the Bengals and the Las Vegas Raiders. Charlie, how do you feel post bye?
You know, I guess we have a trip to Vegas coming up, so we didn't get that much time to recover, but everything's going well.
Yes, it was much needed, and just like the team, it was good to get a little bit of a reset and recharge for these next 8 games and hopefully more if the Bengals are able to make a playoff run. So let's talk about this matchup first, and then we'll kind of get into the playoff landscape and basically moving forward what the Bengals are going to have to do. But this game is a game where I look at all that's happened to the Raiders this year and what the Bengals are coming off of their 2 losses. It's not a must-win game, but for me, it's kind of in that category of a must-win game for a couple reasons. One, mostly for like the swagger and the mentality of this team moving forward. And two, because when you look at the AFC playoff picture, the Raiders are right behind the Bengals in terms of if they want that final wild card spot. So what are just your opening thoughts on this matchup?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great test for the 3 areas we've seen a pretty significant drop-off in over the last 3 weeks. The first is explosive plays to wide receivers. That was the number one hallmark of the Bengals when they were winning as much as they were. It's something that the Jets took away for most of the game, and it's something the Browns took away, in part because the Bengals receivers weren't finishing those plays. Number 2 is pass protection. You know, we've cited specific plays in that Jets game and that Browns game where a specific breakdown in protection has been game changing and has been a huge part of a play that's completely changed the game. And then the third thing is how the Bengals defend in the middle of the field. What the Jets did, we all know. What the Browns were able to do in the run game set the tone for that entire matchup. And the Raiders have playmakers at running back, tight end, and slot receiver. So how are the Bengals defensive tackles, linebackers, and safeties going to make up for the tackling and the coverage issues that kind of define the last 2 losses?
Let's go into all 3 of the topics that you just brought up, because I feel like that kind of covers everything on this team. When you look at the explosive play situation, what do you think has attributed most to the Bengals' kind of inability to connect on those, other than in the last game there were a couple drops? But it just doesn't seem like in the last 2 games, obviously I know a game dictates your ability, like how the score is going dictates your ability of like what you can do. But I guess what do you see is slowing the Bengals down in that area?
So in the last 2 games, the series of explosive plays that stands out to me was in that 4th quarter drive against the Jets where the Bengals tied it. And on that drive, there were 2 really nice scramble passes to Boyd for a big pickup and a similar structure that got CJ Uzama open for a big play on that drive as well. Like, I think that's where the opportunity lies, in the middle of the field with Boyd and Uzama. Obviously, Ja'Marr Chase and explosive plays are going to happen. But recently it seems like defense have been focusing on that so much that the same opportunities haven't been there. Chase is going to keep getting his targets. I don't think there should be a huge shift there, but I do think the gap for explosive plays is what we saw them do successfully against the Jets, and something frankly they didn't try much against the Browns, which is use their playmakers in the middle of the field.
So I'm looking up as we talk right now the box score for the Bengals versus Browns game, because I want to hone in on something you just said. You brought up Tyler Boyd, and that's been a major topic recently because he just hasn't had the same impact in the offense, and it just kind of seems like he's not being featured. So in 2 games, Tyler Boyd has had 6 catches. And I just think that, look, Zach Taylor said that's not ever the plan to go into a game and only have, you know, 2 or 3 targets for Tyler Boyd. But this is now 2 games in a row where he hasn't been a featured part of their offense. And every time the ball goes to him, he makes a play more often than not. And I just think, like, there's no longer the Bengals, Zach Taylor can't close out a game and come to the podium and say, well, you know, the game dictated our ability to go to Tyler Boyd. We wanted to. It just didn't work out. Like, they've got to make a concerted effort, whether it's in those 15 first scripted plays. Like, him and Zach Taylor and Brian Callahan have got to find a way to get the ball to Tyler Boyd earlier in the game, don't you think?
I think part of the reaction is I will give them a little benefit of the doubt, because the plays they call for Tyler Boyd are the 3rd and short plays and the red zone plays. And those are the scenarios where Tyler Boyd gets double teamed more more often than not. Like when the Bengals are in those situations now, teams are just playing for the pass and sending a lot of attention in the middle and then to Jamar, which is taking Boyd away. So that's why I'm turning my attention to opportunities in the middle of the field, opportunities in the minus part of the field. It doesn't have to be the same situations that Tyler Boyd made his money. Because of the margin for error, the attention Jamar Chase is giving the rest of the offense, when you're in the middle of the field, there are going to be chances to get your playmakers the ball, and the Bengals need to do more of that.
And I think with Jamar Chase, to close out the explosive play topic, I think the bye came at a really good time, because although Jamar Chase is used to playing long seasons because of his championship run at LSU, there is such thing as like a rookie wall. And I think it came at a really good time for him especially to be able to kind of take a break and regather himself for this late push, because like you said, they're going to need to get him back involved in the explosive plays to be the team that they were at the beginning of the season. So let's talk about the pass protection next that you brought up. What's been your grade so far for the Bengals pass pro?
So it has been better than I expected. I give it like a B or a B minus. But in general, I'm writing about this week. Like, I don't know how many answers we've found on the Bengals offensive line. I don't know, maybe aside from Jonah Williams, but even Jonah Williams is up for a contract extension at the end of the year. What are the Bengals building around on the offensive line? Where is the core group that they are going to let grow with Burrow? They have it on the defense. They have it with wide receiver. But there's Williams, who's soon going to be due for an extension. And then four players to his right that are question marks long term. No one has solidified a long term spot on the Bengals offensive line, because either on a short term contract or their play is a little bit on the regression. And that for me is a huge concern going forward. They have a lot to prove for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and let's go through it a little bit. So obviously there's been Quentin Spain. Could you say he's solidified his spot?
Well, that's the thing. Like, he's a 1-year deal, and the Bengals have never paid a guard more than $6 million average per season. And I think Quentin Spain has earned more than that. So that's the big question. He has to prove that he's the guard that will make the Bengals do something they've never done before. Even him, the Bengals statistically best offensive lineman this season, he has a lot at stake for him to have a long-term role with the Bengals as well.
Yeah, he's been really good, especially in the run game. And then we talked to Trey Hopkins yesterday, and he was just very honest and said he hasn't been the same player he's been in years past. And I think that's been on display a couple times this year. He's not having a great season. So he's got a lot to prove, and he'll need to play better for them moving forward, because some of these defenses they're going to face are going to really dial up, I think, the pressure on Joe Burrow. I think people are kind of realizing, like, that's the book. Like, if you can affect Joe Burrow and take away his explosive plays, this offense hasn't really proved that they can really muster up a game plan that can do something other than explosive plays. So he's got to play better. And then to the right, Hakeem Adeniji got his first start against the Browns, which I think caught a lot of us by surprise, because he had been injured and hadn't even seen the field. And so the right guard, when your coach says it's kind of a revolving door, is not a good thing. But he's earned the right to start again. So we're kind of back at square one with the right guard situation, right?
So when I think of right guard, here's my concern. Like, there's such a fine line between who the starters are and who the people on the cut line are. Like, if Hakeem Adeniji would have been healthy throughout, you know, the preseason and training camp, the Bengals would have had to make a decision. Like, you only carry four guards: Spain, Sufilo is the week one starter, Carmen, and then a fourth. Would it have been Adeniji? Would it have been one of the other guys?
They
have
Deontay
Smith. They have so many guards, and like, again, there isn't a huge line between the guys who started Adeniji. He wasn't even guaranteed to make the roster in June, July, and August if he had been healthy. Sufilo, the week one starter, he's not guaranteed to be on the roster past December 31st or whenever the season ends this season. So like, the difference between the starters right now and the guys on the cut line is about as thin as it can be. No one has separated themselves really consistently for any stretch at all this season, and that's a huge concern.
Yeah, and they haven't been particularly good in the run game. I think the one area the Bengals can be better in, and they'll get a good opportunity because the Raiders are not good against the run on defense. They're statistically, I think, number 27 against the run this year. So this might be an opportunity for Joe Mixon and those guys to kind of get going in the run game and really set the tone for being a more balanced offense in the second half of the season. So let's talk about, before we move on from pass protection, the matchups between the Bengals offensive line and for the Raiders, their defense kind of comes and goes with their pass rushers, Yannick Ngakoue and Max Crosby. They've both combined for 11 sacks this year. They've been playing really good up front. And I think it's another test for this offensive line to prove if they're going to be able to be better in protection for Joe Burrow, to be able to get through all of his reads and to be able to take advantage of his weapons.
They remind me of the Bears. They have a very similar approach of rushing four and seeing what you can do with the rest of the guys in coverage. And that's the defensive front that gave the Bengals offense the most trouble this season. It's also a similar scheme to what the Browns did and to what the Jets did. Like, the Bengals have to prove that their five can win against the opposing team's four when they have those matchups, and they have to be able to run the ball specifically to take advantage of those matchups, or else the offense won't work because it hasn't been at the same level against this family tree of defenses. It's another chance to do it. While the Raiders have two strong edge rushers, I wouldn't put them in the same camp as what the Bengals faced with the Bears or from the Browns. So it'll be an easier test than those two matchups, but it'll still be the family defense that the Bengals need to show they can beat.
Yeah, it's all about, for Burrow, going to be patient if he does have time to, because as we talked about with the Jets, it's the same similar like Seattle style Gus Bradley defense where they want to make you kind of death by a thousand paper cuts type of defense here. So that's been Joe's specialty, is his accuracy, but can't afford a couple of those interceptions that were potentially scoring plays. Just your thoughts on Joe's interception number now that you've had some time going over it. Are you concerned, not concerned? Doesn't really scare you. What are your thoughts?
So, all right, a couple things. So the majority of Joe's picks haven't been his fault. Six mm-hmm. haven't. Five have. There are two types of interceptions that I've been most concerned with. He's had two to the linebacker this season where he hasn't seen him in the middle of the field. That was the Bears one and the Packers one where he drops back. I believe both plays for Tyler LaBorde where Boyd had a choice route and they just weren't on the same page. That miscommunication twice is a concern that we even seen develop since the Packers game though. And then the other one, it was one that happened against the Packers on a throw to Auden Tate and then one against the Ravens to Jamar Chase. Like Burrow making blind throws where there's supposed to be a break in coverage. Chase and Tate were supposed to be open on those two plays. So against the blitz, he threw it up and those balls got picked. So like those are the two types of plays I'm worried about. But that's four of the five interceptions I put on Burrow right there. Like overall, it's not a concern because the reps on Burrow are low and there has been a focus in those two areas specifically since those moments. So generally not a concern for me.
Yeah, we'll see. And he said yesterday when I asked like, what's the one area that you really want to be better in the second half, he said first and the only thing he said was turnovers. Can't give the ball away. Our offense can't give the ball away, starting with me. So I think that offensively the Bengals are 100% better than the Raiders defense. I think there's a lot of matchups that they can take advantage of outside of those pass rushers that we just talked about. I just don't see at corner and at linebacker them being able to match up with all of the weapons that Cincinnati has. So I think I would definitely take the Bengals offense in this matchup versus this defense.
Yeah, I mean, you saw what the Chiefs did last week. That kind of sets a tone. And it'll be interesting. No one's comparing the Bengals offense to the Chiefs offense yet, but it'll just be a test case on how consistently they're able to, create explosive plays in the same way the Chiefs did. It'll be a week-to-week, one-to-one parallel you can draw. That'll be an interesting measuring stick for where the Bengals are.
Yeah, and before that Bengals-Chiefs game's now looking like a different game than we probably thought about a month ago. I think we probably might have thought, maybe the Bengals are going to beat the Chiefs. And now it looks like the Chiefs have kind of figured some things out. But before we talk about that game, we've got a lot of time before that one. Let's talk about the Bengals defense versus the Raiders offense. This is where I think, would you give the nod to the Raiders in terms of they have more playmakers than the Bengals defense do, just generally speaking?
Well, here's the problem.
No Henry Ruggs?
Aside from Hendrickson, I don't know who the Bengals' best playmakers are right now. Mm-hmm. Shinobi Awuzie hasn't had a pick in a while. Logan Wilson hasn't had a pick in a while. And Jesse Bates has one pass breakup and hasn't been the same interception threat that he has been his entire career. That's my big concern. Where are the Bengals getting their turnovers from? Where are they getting their explosive defensive plays from? That was what was completely just missing against the Jets, aside from those early kind of gimme turnovers. And against the Browns, especially. Against the Browns, you saw how much of a difference turnovers can make. And again, aside from Hendrickson, the Bengals haven't had difference makers since the Ravens game.
Yeah, very disappointing performance from the Bengals defense for the last two games, just because they were so consistent. I think that for me is like the biggest thing. It's they were very a consistent group that I didn't think was ever going to get run all over. They might give up, you know, a few scores here and there, but they've just looked like a different team. They're not as physical up front, it seems like. And like you said, I completely agree. I don't know where their playmakers are, and I don't know where the turnovers are coming from. You know, I came into the season not knowing much about Von Bell and Jesse Bates, and everybody was saying, you know, are they one of the best safety tandems? I haven't seen really a lot from either of them in terms of them making impact game-changing plays. And then outside of Trey Hendrickson, like, where is the rest of the pass rush coming from? We saw for a while Lou was getting into how he can blitz people and bring pressure from different places. Are we going to see more from Mike Hilton in the second half of the season? Like, where are the Bengals getting pressure from other than Trey Hendrickson?
And the Raiders game is interesting for two reasons. One, they've had the bye week. I think if you're going to see schematic changes specifically on third downs, this is the week they would do it. For one, like Akeem Davis-Gaither, their third down specialist, is out for the year. So, like, could this be the week that they switch to a three safety or an extra cornerback on third downs? And the Raiders are a specific case study for that because the Raiders' strengths are their slot receiver, their tight end, and their running back in the pass game. So if there were any week to make a change from a two linebacker front on third down to a three safety front or an extra defensive back on third down, this would be the week to make that big change. And then the other big change you could see was, do they create packages for Vernon Hargraves, a guy they see who can play inside and outside, or Trey Flowers, a guy who they believe in one-on-one with tight ends and man coverage, which they showed against Mark Andrews. Because of injuries and because of the new additions getting more time to acclimate and because of the bye week and the Raiders' strengths, this could be the week the Bengals would make a change. It would be the week to make a change specifically on third downs if that's something the Bengals want to do.
What did you think about Zach Taylor's comments? And I'll catch listeners up. Basically, Zach Taylor was asked, what has Eli Apple done to deserve to continue to be the starter outside across from Cheeto? And he said basically, like, Eli's made a number of good plays. I don't understand, like, where all of the backlash on Eli Apple is coming from. Did you agree with him, or you still think that's a position that you can't really do too much to change it right now? Really good corners aren't just hanging out on the streets, or they'd be somewhere else. It's obviously a position the team's going to have to address in the offseason, but right now, are you comfortable with Eli Apple being your cornerback too, or do you want to see more of Trey Flowers or Vernon Hargraves?
Yeah, there are just two big mistakes. I count on Eli Apple in the pass game, so I will give Zach that. The two were that awful pass interference penalty he had on the left sideline against the Bears, and then just getting beat by Donovan Peoples Jones against the Browns. But aside from that, the real concern with Eli is his tackling. Mm-hmm. He's the worst tackler in the Bengals secondary. He had crucial missed tackles, even dating back to week one against the Vikings on that play by the sideline. He was part of that huge Chubb run. He was part of one of the touchdowns that the Jets had off the left sideline in the fourth quarter. In that loss, like, Apple's tackling has been a legitimate concern, and Hargraves and Flowers' reputation comes with some pedigree, some stats in their favor as tacklers as well. That would have been the reason to make a change, but I see from their perspective, they're not going to make a change at cornerback because of what they've seen in the run game and in the tackling game. That's my overall read, and I will give them the fact that Apple hasn't had an embarrassing amount of mistakes in coverage aside from that Browns play. Like, frankly, like the Bengals had last season, like even compared to what they had at outside corner last year, it hasn't been the same issue yet.
Yeah. So this is a big game for the Bengals defense. I think they really need to show better than they have the last two games. It's like, okay, they had the clunker of the game against the Jets. Then the Browns just beat the doors off the Bengals in all aspects. This game's the one where I think we're going to learn a lot about, like, who this Bengals defense really is.
And it's the kind of matchup that especially against the Bengals defense, it's what they've historically struggled with, as I mentioned. Slot receivers, tight ends, running backs out of the backfield. Like, it's something that challenged them a lot against the Jets and the Browns in particular. How do they address those areas? Are guys like Von Bell, Jesse Bates, and Mike Hilton and Logan Wilson elevating their play at this stage of the season, which the Bengals just frankly need after how many issues they had in the middle of the field over the last 2 weeks?
Yeah. So all eyes are going to be on Jesse Bates, Logan Wilson, and those guys, because just those are the guys that they want to be their playmakers, and they, at some point they got to step up and be that. So let's just talk about, before we get out of here today, let's talk about the kind of like playoff landscape and the magnitude of this game. I mentioned that this game is important because of where the Raiders sit at 5-4 and where the Bengals sit at 5-4. The Bengals basically have all of the AFC West to play. So they have to play the Chargers, the Chiefs, the Raiders, and the Broncos. And then they still have one more round at the AFC North, plus a game versus the 49ers. How many games do you think the Bengals need to win of their final 8 games to make it in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think they'll need 10. Right now I have them at 9-8 and missing the playoffs. I think there are too many teams to climb right now for a 9-8 record to do it. And specifically, I mentioned the defense, but then the consistency they need in the offense on third and shorts and in the red zone based off what they've done the last 2 weeks and the turnovers. Like, there's a lot the Bengals have to change and make significant improvements on. Now, maybe Joe Burrow does it. Joe Burrow has had so many great flashes this season, and he's at the stage of his career where he could very well seem poised to make that second half jump and lead the Bengals to a really strong finish in 10 wins. But right now, based off how much there is to overcome schematically and how many teams there are to overcome in the standings, I have them just missing out at 9-8.
I agree with you. I think 10, but I more so look at like losses. I think that they can only lose 2 more games. I think that you can't get in with more than 6 losses, and I think that these next 3 games are so important. I think you need to beat the Raiders and you need to beat the Steelers at home that Thanksgiving weekend. Man, that game is going to be huge, because right now, if the playoffs started today, the Steelers would be in, despite the fact that the Bengals beat them. The Ravens and Steelers would be in over the Bengals, even though the Bengals beat both of them. I think that game's huge, and then the weekend after that against the Chargers, because the Raiders and Chargers are looking like the 2 potential wild card teams, because it looks like the Chiefs are going to win that division. So I think these next 3 games are huge for the Bengals.
Yeah, and again, like, it's the mental part of it too. I'm very interested to see who the best players under pressure are on the Bengals. They haven't had pressure yet. Obviously, like, that Ravens game was a nothing to lose kind of stakes. And then since then, it's been a fall off. Aside from Joe Burrow, who are the best players in this environment? This is what you judge looking forward. I mentioned it with the offensive line. This is when you identify the players to build around based off who plays well and who really you rely on at this stage of the season.
Yeah, and Jesse Bates said he's never been in this situation in his career where you're coming out of the bye week and you've actually got something to play for. So I think the guys are definitely in a different situation that most of the guys are in a different situation that they've been, but it's kind of at this point, like, enough talk about it. Like, we'll find out who this Bengals team really is by the way they play these final 8 games, right?
Exactly. They do have a lot of home games in their favor. Mm-hmm. They do have an efficient run game in their favor at this time of the year. And they do have one of the best quarterbacks among that muddled group. I think Burrow's better than Mac Jones right now. I think Burrow's better than Roethlisberger and Baker Mayfield right now. In the AFC West, I think Burrow's better than Derek Carr and Teddy Bridgewater, and you can put him right there with Justin Herbert. And those are ultimately the factors that end up being huge pieces in the second half of the season. They have that in their favor, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Interesting. You think Burrow's better than Derek Carr?
Yeah.
I think Derek Carr's playing really well this year, so we'll see. That's an interesting point. Well, that is it for Charlie and I. We will be back, as always, following the game against the Raiders to give you guys our post-game analysis. And now we're going to bring in Jason Hoffman to talk overs and unders and what to look for in this week's NFL game slate. Well, Jason Hoffman and I are back to talk about this week's landscape of games. Jason, let's recap. I guess, what week was that? Because we had the bye. How did we do last week?
We did pretty decent.
Yeah.
My favorite bet of the week was the easiest win of the week, which was New England just destroying Cleveland in every facet of the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, we didn't do bad. We went on the picks that we gave here. We went 3-2.
Uh-huh.
The home dog for me lost. The home dog for you won.
Yes.
But beyond that, I mean, we're still above water here on the season, and we've bounced back nicely after having a couple of rough weeks. So this week, on the other hand, I love the board.
Okay.
I'm just going to tell you right now. Oh. There are a lot of games that I like. In the interest of time, we're going to keep it to five and then the Bengals. Maybe the Bengals will be in there. But I like the board a lot this week. I think the picture is getting clearer, as they say.
Right. So, okay, there's a lot of games. When I looked at the spread last night and was thinking about it this morning, I have a lot of questions about, like, Vegas is really loving the Eagles. Like, these are just my general thoughts. I know that, like, they're playing the Saints without a quarterback, really. But, I mean,
good
a couple weeks
win.
Ago, we were saying, like, how bad are the Eagles? And now that they're favored against Sean Payton, I don't know. I think that's interesting.
The old saying is, good teams win, but great teams cover.
Yes.
And if the spread counted for the playoffs, the Eagles would be the number two seed in the NFC right now. That's why Vegas likes them, because they don't win. But, man, do they cover.
They cover.
Yep, they get in there with garbage time covers, backdoor covers, whatever you want to call them. They get in there.
And then the other one that I'm confused about is Seattle and Arizona. But it kind of sounds like Kyler Murray might play. So with that, are they just – is Seattle favored just because they think that they'd be playing non-Kyler Murray Cardinals?
I think it's a multitude of the injury bug that has bitten Arizona.
Yeah.
They're looking at – I mean, Kyler Murray is 5.5 points. Mm-hmm. Remember we talked about a few weeks ago how many points a quarterback's worth? Last week – or they were on the bye last week. 2 weeks ago, he was 5.5 points. When he was out and Colt McCoy was starting, that game moved 5.5 points. So it's a multitude of things. It's J.J. Watt. It's DeAndre Hopkins. It's Kyler Murray. And the uncertainty of – what 22 guys is Arizona going to be able to put out there?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I don't get it. I think Seattle's an absolute dumpster fire right now. It's in a tailspin.
They could be entering
complete rebuild
mode and
yep.
give Russell Wilson There's, away and just kind of like figure it out, because they just continue to not draft well. They don't have a first round pick because they gave that to Jamal Adams, and that's not looking like the greatest decision they've made. So, I mean, they could really be entering start-over mode in Seattle.
There's already been leaks out of Seattle. If you follow the media up there and some of the national guys, there's already been leaks and gals suggesting that they might move Pete Carroll into an executive front office role so that he can still have his hands on the organization but look to somebody else to be the coach. And I think that all stems from the Russell Wilson leaking out there that he wants to get traded – not happy with the way that things are going. Maybe, I mean, the organization's going to have to make a choice. If they don't make the playoffs, they don't come back and make an insane run to the playoffs this year, they're going to have to make a choice. Do you keep Russell Wilson, put the right people around him, or do you stay with Pete Carroll, who, yes, won you a Super Bowl and got you to another one, but, I mean, I know he's youthful, but how old is he?
71, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, there's going to come a point in time where they're going to have to make that choice, and I think that time is coming up very soon.
Yeah, that one's an interesting one. And then the third one that I love that I'm sure we'll talk about later on, but Cowboys at Chiefs, that's a big game, and the Chiefs
where
being
favored.
Where
are you at
favored. On that one?
It's 2.5 points right now.
So I originally was like, no way. Like, why would the Chiefs be favored? And I know that it's at home, right? So, like, they obviously get points for that. But I don't know. I kind of think that – like, I think – I don't want to reveal anything that I'm going to say later, but it might shock you what I think about this game.
Okay.
I probably just teased it and gave you what
that's,
I was going to do.
That's fine. All right. So let's move in. What is your first game of the week that you would lay money on?
I would lay money on the Steelers beating the Chargers. The Chargers are favored 3.5 right now. I just think, like, the Chargers are not – sounds like they might not have Joey Bosa.
Can I break in here? Breaking news. That line has actually been bet to 5.5.
Wow.
Yeah. 2-point move overnight. A lot of money came in on the Chargers. So it's now Chargers -5.5.
Huh.
So if you like Steelers -3 or +3.5, you're going to like them a lot at 5.5.
Okay. Good to
and
know.
And I'm on the other side of that. Yeah. I think LA wins this by at least 10 points, if not more.
Okay. Oh, wait, are you seeing something different from the Chargers that I'm missing? Because
no,
they kind of like...
I'm betting against the Steelers.
Okay.
Because if they don't get helped by the Zebras 2 weeks ago on Monday night against the Bears, they are not winning that game. The Bears are not a good team. Now, granted, they've given the AFC North outside of the Browns fits this year. Beat the Bengals, should have beaten the Steelers. I'll have a pick for everyone with the Ravens game this weekend. But no, I am more going against the... what looks like not very good Steelers team. Chargers to rebound. I think they win by at least 10 points this week.
Okay, but let me just say this. The Steelers, as of right now, the Steelers would be in the playoffs and the Bengals wouldn't.
Correct.
So we can say, like, and I think it's funny because everybody talks about the Steelers, and I heard a line that I thought was really funny. It was like, cover your nose when you like talk about the Steelers. Like, the Steelers are somehow going to win this game, but like, cover your nose because it's going to be so ugly. Because yeah. I mean, like, that game against the Lions, I watched the whole thing because that was the only game on here. And I was like, gosh, does anybody even want to win this game? Like, the Steelers are just not that good. But you can say that, but at the same time, they do enough to win. So
they do enough to win. That's all that matters. This is not college football. That is correct. But I am saying right now, the Steelers are going to go out on Monday Night Football into L.A. and get run out of that building is okay. My guess.
All right. Well, we'll see next. So that game's that one's I'm keeping my eye on that one. And then the other one that you could obviously take like the easy one of like the Texans at Titans. Titans are going to blow them out the water.
Is that easy?
Yeah. The Titans, like, I think the Titans are really good. And I just don't think, like, I think they bring on the mentality of their head coach. But
I thought that was 13.5 when I saw that game. I initially thought this was a 13.5 point line, mm-hmm. maybe even 14.5, the crazy high watermark of betting spreads in the NFL. And then I saw it at 9.5, and I'm going to not touch that game at all.
Okay.
Because to me, that says that somebody in Vegas knows something that I have not even thought of.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I'm that far off of a line that I think it should be, I'm not going anywhere near that game.
Okay.
But I do agree. The Titans look – right now, they look the part of a number one or number two seed in the AFC. Mm-hmm. I just – how old's Adrian Peterson? He's going to keep that offense?
He's like 40. I mean, Lord. I don't want to make him 40. Titan is late 30s.
Yeah. And he is a machine. He's a beast. And luckily for him, he only had to come in and play, the last 9 weeks of the season this year? But they lose him, possibly, then what are you going to do? That offense is so based on running the ball. But who knows? AP could turn around and just go nuts.
So, and the other game that I want to talk about that I think has upset written all over it is the Minnesota Vikings versus the Green Bay Packers. I think that Mike Zimmer's
home
actually
dog alert.
They're actually not my home dog pick, though. No. But I think that Mike Zimmer is really good against the spread from what I've done, like, research-wise. Yeah. And he's great as an underdog. And I just think, like, this is a letdown game. And the Vikings have played the Packers pretty close in the last couple of years. I think that emotionally, like, they're due for a letdown game. I just think the NFL, it's too hard to run the table and – like, they had all the emotions against Seattle where it was like Aaron Rodgers is coming back. And I just think that the Vikings are going to upset the Packers this week.
And this is that time of year where Mike Zimmer coach teams start winning enough games
for him
that
to keep
nobody
his job.
Says he's going to get fired. Yeah. He just comes back, gets a contract, whatever.
Yeah.
I like that pick. Mm-hmm. I do. I wouldn't go there just because I'm not going to go there personally. But I do like your thinking there.
Yes. So that those are my main thoughts without giving away my home dog pick.
All right. So here's where I'm going. Starting up, or I should say, starting down in Hotlanta with the New England Mac Jones-led Patriots going down there.
What is the spread?
6.5. I
love it.
Shocked
it's not more.
I thought it was a 10-point game when I saw it. And I'm like, you give it to me at 6.5, even 7.5, I'm there.
Right.
I love that. I also want to sprinkle in the under. So 46.5 right now is the over under.
Mm-hmm.
And the over, if you bet that, is -115. The under is -105. So there's a little value there.
Okay.
I don't know that Atlanta scores more than 10 points. And I don't think New England's going to score more than 35.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
I like the under.
That's good.
Another game that I really like is Indianapolis going to Buffalo. And
that's actually a sneaky good game this weekend.
It is. It's a rematch of last year's divisional round, wild card round, whatever it was. But I think, you know, the Bills are laying 7.5 in this game. And I don't know which Bills team is going to show up because they've been Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde this year. But
losing to the Jaguars. What a bad loss.
Oh,
disappointing performance by the Bills.
In a game that was fit to be streamed on Nickelodeon only.
Yes.
9-6.
Six, yeah.
So I don't like the spread in this. It's 7.5. I thought it would be a lower spread than that. So I'm going to stay away from the spread. I thought it was maybe a 4.5, 4-point game. But what I am going to do is go the under. 50.5. I don't know how 50 points get scored in that game.
Yeah, same.
So I'm going to go under. It's a -115. There's not a ton of value there, but you know that's two unders. One more game that I like a lot, and this is not my home dog, so I'm going to, you know, that's upcoming. But Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I almost said Tampa Bay Patriots. You know that? Hosting the New York Giants on Sunday night and
Monday night
or right? Monday night. My bad.
Yeah.
And they're laying 10.5 points. The Giants are bad. Tom Brady wakes up in the morning when he's going to play the Giants, though, and forgets that he's Tom Brady sometimes.
Yeah, because for the last 2 years, the Giants have given Tom Brady fits.
For the last 21 years while he's been in the NFL, they've given him fits. There's two Super Bowl rings that he's missing.
Forgot about his time pre-Tampa.
Yeah. But I'll tell you what. I think Tommy Terrific flips the script, and even though it's 10.5 points, I like the Bucs to show up and not play – I'm not going to do a Bruce Arians impression, but not play stupid football. As
a stupid football team.
As he said last week after that god-awful loss at the football team. So I like Tampa Bay to go at home to cover the 10.5. I'm going to say they win by 14 or 17.
Okay.
Home dog, who you got?
I'm going with the Chiefs. I think that the Vegas is right on this. I think that even though everybody in the world thinks the Cowboys are like destined for the Super Bowl this year and everybody loves the Cowboys and the Cowboys are really good, I just think the Chiefs are on the up, and I think that the Chiefs offense is going to give Dallas defense too many fits, and I think that's a safe pick for the Chiefs to win at home right now. And I think it was 2.5 when I looked at it this morning. Yeah.
So this is a prove it game, right?
Yes.
Last week, everyone's like, the Chiefs are back. Right. They finally woke
up. You were super down on the Chiefs a couple weeks ago.
Super down on them because that defense is awful.
Right.
However, Derek Carr looked like the other type of Derek Carr that he can be against that defense last week. So who knows?
Yes.
Again, cliche, any given Sunday for a reason.
Yeah.
I like the idea only because the Chiefs are at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the only reason why.
But also, the other angle I like on this is it's, like I said, a prove it game. Mm-hmm. And everyone's telling Dallas, NFC champions, here we come. Go looking every bit of a Super Bowl team. However, this is a Mike McCarthy coach team. In a big moment, Mike McCarthy coach teams tend to, shall we say, tighten up a little bit in big situations. So I like that a lot. I think this is a game where Mahomes comes out, throws it all over the place, does all kinds of crazy stuff. UC alum, Bearcat great Travis Kelce goes off. I'm with you there. All right.
Who you got?
My home dog of the week. Coming in on the money line at +180. And everyone listening, please keep me in your thoughts and prayers. The Chicago Bears hosting the Baltimore Ravens.
Okay.
They're getting 4.5 points at home. As I said earlier, the Bears have given the AFC North fits. I think that defense uses the mold that the Bengals put in place for everyone else in the league to shut Lamar down. And I think Justin Fields, even though I'm not going to call him a good quarterback yet, I think he does enough to get it done. And I think the Bears, and if you're a Bears fan out there, don't hate me for this. I think the Bears win on like a last second field goal and it doesn't triple doink and they win a big game. That's what I think happens. So possibly young Lamar, Justin Fields versus Lamar. And I can't believe I'm saying young Lamar. Lamar's only 25 years old. but yeah, that's my home dog of the week.
That's a good pick.
Bears +180 to beat the Ravens outright. The other one that I wanted to possibly sprinkle on there, but I didn't. The New York Jets hosting the Miami god-awful Dolphins.
Jeez.
The Jets are getting 3.5 right now. Robert Saleh did the get my name out of your mouth or whatever.
To Rex Ryan.
Rex Ryan, who God, Rex
Can he
Ryan.
Just stop talking?
It's amazing.
It's amazing how he's still relevant. Like, it really is.
I'll give him credit. The man finds a way to stay relevant. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, those are the two home dogs I like the most this week. The Jets are coming in at plus 145.
Jets with Joe Flacco starting at quarterback.
He is elite. Yeah. I don't know how you can bet on the Dolphins. Now, you might not bet on the Jets, but I don't know how anyone could bet on the Dolphins.
But you bet on the Dolphins because they beat the Ravens.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, but no. Ugh. Yeah. All right, so let's get into our matchup, the one that you and Charlie will be at, out in Vegas at the Death Star, Mark Davis's Death Star there in the desert. Vegas says that these teams are mirror images of each other. It's a half-point spread. And the funny thing about this, you can take the Bengals plus a half. That means you're voting for a tie, basically.
Yeah.
Because the money line for the Bengals and the spread are both minus 115. The money line and the spread for the Raiders to cover the half point are both 105. Hmm. So just bet the money line either way. The over under, I think, is 46.5 last I saw, if I remember correctly. I like the over. I think there's going to be a lot of points. I know I've been wrong. I've called track meets a lot this year that have not occurred. There's been the chance for them to occur, but they have not occurred. I think I finally get my track meet this week. I think Joe Burrow and Derek Carr both throw for well over 300 yards each. I think Joe Mixon goes off, gets over 125 yards combined, total yards from receiving and rushing. I think the Bengals win a shootout. I'm going to say 42-35. So I would go the over, and I would go Bengals plus the half point or the money line, whichever you like. It's the same odds.
If Derek Carr throws for over 300 yards, the Bengals are not winning this game.
You don't think so?
No.
You don't think this can be an old school, throw it all the way up and down the field?
When the Bengals were at their best, their defense was playing really good in the red zone and not giving up touchdowns. And I think that in order for them to win, that I think that there is zero chance this offense scores 42 points. Zero. I am like,
can't go big play, big play, big play, big play.
Not right now. I'm so confused by the Bengals offense. I just can't. If they don't have the explosive play to Ja'Marr Chase, they just are like a mediocre offense. And I just haven't seen what their identity is without the explosive plays. And defensive, like the Bengals were 5-2 because of their defense. And if their defense gives up more than 34 points, I just don't see them being able to overcome that offensively. So I think that if that's what you like, I just think the Bengals will lose if Derek Carr throws more than 300 yards and it's kind of a shootout. But that's just my thoughts.
That's fine. You're entitled to that, and you're probably right. I think we're at the point now where unless there's a blizzard or like 30-mile-per-hour winds, I'm just going to call for a shootout every single week.
Okay. Then
when it happens, I'm coming in here the following Thursday and see, I told you there was going to be a shootout. Okay. You're way smarter about this team than I am. That's why you're there every day. That's why you get paid.
The nice
bucks to cover them. But yeah, I'm still waiting to see the Joe Burrow throw it all over the yard game.
Yeah, we have yet to see the game where Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, and
everyone gets involved.
Chase go off and have at least, you know, over 50 receiving yards per. It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well, I look forward to it. You and Charlie will both be out there. And I hope everyone listening to this will follow along. And I just want to remind everyone also that all the lines here are courtesy of Tipico Sportsbook. Tipico Sportsbook is a partner of Gannett, which is our parent company. And Gannett can and does make money off of that partnership. If you or anyone you know has a gambling problem, please go to 1-800-GAMBLER, call 1-800-GAMBLER, or go to 1-800-GAMBLER.com and get the help you need. Remember, all the stuff that we say here on this podcast, on this segment, it's all for fun. This is not professional betting advice. Hence, we give it to you for free. And we like to have fun with it. So have fun out there and enjoy your weekend.